Lisa Davis, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. What is a previvor? Well, today's guest, Dina Rothport, explains in her new book, a previvor is a person who has not had cancer but possesses a predisposition to develop it. For some, it means having a family history of breast cancer or other risk factors. For others, it also means testing positive for one of the breast cancer gene mutations, BRCA1 and BRCA2. All in all, a previvor often tackles her risk before cancer develops via increased surveillance, risk-reducing drugs, or the complete removal of healthy breast tissue. Her wonderful book, Previvors, Facing the Breast Cancer Gene and Making Life-Changing Decisions, is the first guide that gives options for women who have a high risk for developing breast cancer. And I found the book so helpful. And Dina, I'm so glad that you wrote it. And I want to say that you were the assistant health editor at Glamour Magazine and an editor at Parenting. And now you're a full-time freelance writer. I want to welcome you to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you on the show now, Dina. And previvors, we were brought into the lives of AD, Lisa, Suzanne, Amy, and Rory, who are all previvors, and they all underwent prophylactic mastectomy so they could stop living in fear. How was it and get to know these amazing women?
Well, it was incredible. You know, they came to me about a few years ago and barely even heard of this word, previvors. It's such a new word. And they explained to me that they were previvors, and they had all gone through facing their risk, weighing the options, all of these issues that they faced and very difficult decisions that they made. And they had each other to rely on at the time, but they really didn't have that one quintessential guide that could really help them and guide them through all the emotional and physical issues that they would face as previvors. And they said, Dina, can you write this book for us? And, of course, I agreed. And you know, they were amazing women, and they were just hearing their stories. I knew that this book had to be written and their stories had to be told. We quickly realized, though, that previvors first facing the risk don't just want the personal accounts. They also need the facts. So that's why I also included interviews with more than 70 leading medical experts to really create a comprehensive guide for previvors. But the best part for me was getting to know these five women. I didn't know them at the time, and now some of them are my, you know, I consider them my closest friends. And they're just such brave, amazing women, and they introduced me to this whole world of previvors, and I'm very grateful to them that they gave me this opportunity to write such an important book.
Oh, it is such an important book, and it's fantastic. And I love reading stories about women who have to make these decisions and their processes, and it's so difficult. And you write that there was one commonality that all pushed them over the edge if you could do the procedure. What was that?
The one commonality that pushed them over the edge was the fact that they were all mothers. You know, anyone facing the risk, it's a very, very, you know, difficult time to go through, and single women have their whole different set of issues to face, or younger women or women who haven't yet had children. But for Lisa, Mady, Amy, Rory, and Suzanne, the women in my book, they were all mothers. And, you know, I'm a mother, too, and I would do anything for my kids and to be there for my kids. And, you know, for instance, Suzanne in the book, Suzanne grew up without a mother. Her mother died on Suzanne's first day of kindergarten. And, you know, she never really knew what it was like to grow up without a mother until she had her own daughter, Nina. And Suzanne looks at Nina and says, you know, I know what it was like to not have that one person who was there for you no matter what. And she said, there's no way I was going to let my daughter grow up the same way. You know, Lisa in the book, for instance, she, you know, wasn't necessarily sure what she wanted to do about her risk. But then when her own mother passed away from breast cancer, Lisa took a look at her three children and said, you know what, they just lost their grandmother to cancer. I'm not going to let them lose me, too. So, and, you know, all five of them have stories like this. So that was definitely one of the biggest factors for them.
Yeah, and it's not just breast cancer. They can also look for ovarian cancer. And that really touched home for me. My mother died 15 years ago, and I have a 6-year-old.
Sorry.
Oh, thank you. I know, it's so hard. I have a 6-year-old daughter. And when you said that, you know, you do anything for your kids, I think the same way. And this book has really got me thinking about it. And I'm sure there'll be listeners out there who have increased risk. And that's why it's such a great book to read, because it's not pushy. It's not preachy. It just tells you what's out there. It gives you the options. It takes you through these women's stories. Like I said, I think it's a wonderful book. And if you can talk a little bit about BRCA1.
You know, we're all born. Every single man and woman, child, every single person has two genes that are called BRCA1 and BRCA2. We have two copies of both genes. We receive one from our mother and one from our father. And the role of these genes, they're called tumor suppressor genes, and their role is to basically stop the growth of cell growth and duplication of cells in our breasts and ovaries. So when these genes are not working correctly or when they're mutated, then the cells could kind of grow out of control and cancer can occur. When a woman has a BRCA mutation, her risk for breast cancer during her lifetime is up to 87%, and her risk for ovarian cancer is up to 44% in her lifetime. When a man has a BRCA mutation, and yes, you know, a lot of people don't realize that, yes, men could have BRCA mutations as well, a man's risk for prostate cancer is increased, his risk for breast cancer is increased, and most importantly, men and women both have 50-50 odds of passing those mutations on to their children. So if a man in particular has a BRCA mutation, he can pass that on to his daughters, his granddaughters. So that's why, you know, I have a chapter in the book entitled Hidden Killer in Men. It's very important that you always look at the father's side of the family as well as your mother's, because it counts just as much. So that's why that's so important.
Yeah, that really is. And you write in the book that Rory opted to have the oophorectomy and the prophylactic mastectomy both,
yeah,
while some of the other women, I think Suzanne was considering it. But that's a tough one, you know, because, again, the going into early menopause and if you haven't had kids, watch someone you love struggle and lose their battle. It really is. It gets you thinking that maybe even though it's going to be difficult, you know, you want to be there for your children and to enjoy your life without all the fear, because the fear you write about it, that it takes on a life of its own, and it's breathing and it's living and it's so overpowering.
Yes, absolutely. I have a whole chapter just about fear in the book, and it kind of is what drives these women's decisions. But kind of the message in Provivors is the whole idea that we could turn our fear into empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we fear breast cancer more than any other disease, even though heart disease kills 10 times as many women each year. We fear this disease, but the truth is we don't have to anymore. We could learn our risk and learn the options that we have to protect ourselves, options that weren't available generations ago. Women who were destined to get breast cancer were kind of blindsided by it. But now we could kind of be smarter than cancer and at least start to be smarter than cancer and really take steps to protect ourselves.
Yeah,
and it's very empowering.
It really is. And you write in the book, you have a section on non-surgical options and surgical options. If you can share some of the non-surgical options first.
Sure, absolutely. Well, the non-surgical options for Previvors are, one, they can make lifestyle changes, such as eating a healthier diet and exercising and limiting alcohol to one drink a day and taking steps like that. Now, these changes aren't going to radically decrease your risk, but they'll improve your overall health and they can somewhat decrease your breast cancer risk. And you might as well. I mean, you know, it's just living a healthy lifestyle is going to help you against a whole host of diseases.
Mm-hmm.
So that's option number one. Option number two is increased surveillance. Right now, the average woman should be getting mammograms starting at age 40, getting, consider doing breast self-exams, getting their annual clinical exam. However, Previvors should talk to their doctors about possibly starting all of that earlier. They also, some of them add MRI to their annual regimen, which helps also catch cancers earlier stages. So that's increased surveillance. The third option is chemo prevention, which is basically the whole idea behind chemo prevention is taking pills that lower your risk by up to 50%. So those are all the non-surgical options, and they're very good options. And in the book, you know, I discuss equally all of these options. Now, the five women in the book considered all of these options. Some of them chose surveillance for decades before ultimately choosing to have a prophylactic mastectomy. Just because they chose that's not the right decision for everyone. And this is these are really individual choices, and that's why I go through all the options and present them equally, because, you know, I'm not here to tell anyone what to do. It's a very, very personal decision. But there are very good options for women who are high risk for breast cancer.
Yeah, there are. And so the surgical options being you can have the prophylactic mastectomy. There's also different, you can have an implant or you can have, if you can tell us about some of the flap procedures.
Sure. A flap surgery basically takes tissue from other parts of your body to recreate the breast. So, you know, sometimes they take it from the stomach area, the back, you know, it, basically wherever you have enough tissue to recreate the breast at the size that you want to recreate it. You know, there's many pros and cons. I go through them in the book. Again, it's a very personal choice, but there are pros and cons to choosing implants over flaps. Flaps tend to have a more natural look, mm-hmm. and, you know, the tissue kind of grows with your body, so if you gain weight, then your breast tissue gains weight. It's not like implants where, obviously, they remain the same size. So, but the surgery is more involved, and you do have two surgical incisions, one at the area of where the flap is taken and one in your breast. So there are many considerations when you're choosing between these options, but, you know, they're all very good options today. I mean, doctors are focusing not just on removing the breast tissue, but they're also focusing on recreating a breast that looks as natural as possible. And, you know, there really are some good options out there for previvors today.
Oh, that's great, because I know that there's a lot of implants that don't look supernatural.
I live in Boca Raton, Florida, so it's, I think, one of the top three places in the country for breast implants.
Oh,
so
no.
I definitely know that. But and that's the thing, you know, the women in the book, Lisa, Mady, Amy, Rory, and Suzanne, they look incredible. I mean, you would never know. They are so thrilled with their results. I mean, I know a lot of women out there aren't, and, you know, I say that in the book as well, that you know, you have to know what the possible outcomes are, the good and the bad. But in the case of these five women, they were all thrilled with their results. They look great. They feel great. They no longer have that fear. So for them, having the prophylactic mastectomy was absolutely the right decision. I'm not saying it is for everyone, but for them it was. You know, there's controversy about this surgery, and, you know, again, living in South Florida, you see women with implants all the time, and why is there such controversy about, really, in the end, they look the same, and it's the same cosmetic outcome. I mean, the surgery is obviously a lot more involved, and you're removing the breast tissue, so that's, you know, very different surgery, but cosmetically, they look the same, so what's with the controversy with prophylactic mastectomy? That was Lisa's question in the book.
Yeah, I agree.
Very interesting.
I know. I mean, you see them everywhere. So it's something to me that just makes sense. I mean, if you're at this risk, and I think it said 90% their risk is cut down by having a prophylactic mastectomy. Wow.
Yes, it goes, I mean, way below that of the average woman. So, you know, it's a good option for providers as well. However, again, you have to weigh your options. And that's why, you know, it's very, very important that you do so with the help of a genetic counselor to help you walk you through your options, walk you through your risk, and really understand all the psychological issues that you might face. And it's important to have that guidance, because it could be a very confusing, overwhelming time for providers.
Oh, definitely. And I mean, the healing time can be difficult, and the drains, I know. I knew someone who had to have a drain, and boy, they were not happy about that.
Right. That's what they said, that was the worst part of the surgery,
the drains. The thing is, going through that is so much less, obviously, than what could happen. And that's what I'm sure is on their mind. Like, what's going to be, like, this isn't going to be fun or easy, but just getting that worry off my mind is going to be so huge. And then for the women who have the oophorectomy, am I saying it right? Okay. You know, they, again, can go into early menopause, but there are things that can be done.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Rory definitely had a difficult time in the book. I do just want to say that, you know, some of the women, like Lisa and Mady in the book, do not have a BRCA mutation.
Mm-hmm.
And for them, the whole risk for ovarian cancer, that's not an issue for them. Because their risk came from something else. But women who do have a BRCA mutation do have to consider ovarian cancer as well. Rory, it was a very difficult decision, obviously, to remove her ovaries. But she was done having her children. Her mother had just died of ovarian cancer. Her sister battled ovarian cancer, and she said, I have to have my ovaries removed. She looked at her children and said, I have to do this. And at first it was very, very difficult, but she did find ways to deal with the symptoms, and now she said she feels better than ever.
That's great.
You know, there are options, and that's kind of the whole point of the book, and, you know, just the whole concept of providers in general. I mean, today is actually National Provider Day. It was passed by Congress, and a bunch of organizations like Forbes and Bright Pink and Young Survival Coalition, and a representative here from Florida, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, passed this through Congress to declare today, the last Wednesday of September, National Provider Day. And the whole idea of my book, Providers, and this National Provider Day is to get the word out that you do have options, that you know, if you're at risk, don't just, you know, cower in fear from it, but pursue it and learn your options and learn your risk and do it for yourself and your children and your loved ones, and take those steps, because, you know, it's we're a lucky generation that we have these options, because the ones before us didn't have them. So, you know, that's kind of the whole message that we're trying to get across.
Yeah, well, you do a wonderful job of it. And I want to thank you so much, Dina. Again, Providers Facing the Breast Cancer Gene and Making Life-Changing Decisions, a groundbreaking guide with the stories of five courageous women. And how can people learn more about you and your terrific work?
They could go to my website to learn more about me, which is dinarothport.com. To learn more about the book, they could go to previvors.com, which is, we have an excellent forum for providers to share their stories, and there's a blog and an iPhone app, and we're creating a whole package for providers on providers.com as well. So hopefully it'll help women out there.
Oh, definitely. No, it's really helped me. Like I said, I'm going to go to my doctor and start really considering getting tested. So I want to thank you so much personally. And I know my listeners are really going to appreciate it.
Well,
thank you. I know, I'll have to let you know what happens. And if you do another book, you can interview me. see what happens. But if people want to find out more about the show, they can go to itsyourhealthnetwork.com. You can watch It's Your Health TV. You can listen to audio archives. You can check me out on KKZZ 1400 AM in Ventura County, where I co-host Wellness Wednesdays, which is a live call-in show on the Freeman Michael Show. He is amazing. I hope everyone has a great day. Take care. Bye-bye.